Welcome to another edition of Eusebius on Times Live. I am in my studio, and I normally do these interviews via Zoom, but for once I actually am doing a live recording with my guest. I'm busy fraternizing with a former politician. I think you might know her by the name of Mbali Ntuli, and so I can't be accused of sucking up to a politician and having scones and cake with her, because she's now just an ordinary member of the public. You're listening to Eusebius on Times Live. That's this latest podcast on Times Live. And it's me, Eusebius McKaiser, exploring the major issues of the week. That means you're going to hear a lot of law, politics and ethics, how they intersect and how important these stories are in the life of all South Africans.
When people saw
their children must know this are sellouts.
They put saliva on the paper.
Mr. Julius Malema whispered and said, sing it, sing it.
And then they shared that zone.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
Can I have my iPad, please? So they stole it.
Good morning.
Morning, and thank you for the cake.
I don't have to declare it. There's absolutely nothing that will come out of it.
And I don't have to declare it
either. It's the good cake.
It is. It's really nice.
Yeah, well, shout out to Just Teddy's. They make amazing cakes at Hyde Park, darling.
Yay.
If that's your neck of the hoods. Before we talk about the logic of your having announced this morning that you are no longer a member of the Democratic Alliance, you said something which I think I can share with the public, that you feel, I think, kind of sad. And it's interesting that you declared your feelings when you walked in, not only on the basis of comfort with me, because we've known each other for donkey's years, but actually my first question to you was going to be, putting the logic aside for the decision, how do you feel?
I do. I feel sad. Maybe sad's not the right word. I think emotional is the right word. I've been in the DA for a very long time. It's been a big part of my formative years. I've made many friends that are probably as close as family now. And it's been a lot of sweat and tears and toil. It hasn't always been easy, but it's also not easy to just leave something that you've spent so much of your life doing. So it does feel a little bit emotional, especially because everybody's sort of talking like I'm dying. so that's a little bit weird. But also I think it's emotional because you look back on everything that you've done and the kindness that people are, you know, expressing towards me, and it makes you feel like sometimes you don't know if you have an impact, but it does feel a little bit like I did. So that's a bit emotional.
Mm. Do you feel free?
I think I've always felt free, but I do feel like I'll be less constrained going forward about sort of how I can say things and do things. And I think I've already been quite forthright already, but sure. I look forward to just being even more of myself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason I'm asking that question is when I interviewed Bongani Baloyi after he left the Democratic Alliance, he viscerally, you could feel his sense of freedom. And I guess he was not as open about how he felt about particular moments within the party as you have been over the last 15 odd years. But he happily declared a sense of freedom. I mean, you can see it. There's like sort of Bongani during the DA days, and then there's Bongani afterwards. You know, the same with Musi. Musi is a different character now. Lindiwe was also relatively free like you and speaking her mind. But in my observation, which it's not to say it's gospel, when she left, went overseas and she started writing as a columnist, there was definitely a kind of general freedom with which she was expressing herself and her place in the world that wasn't there. And it's not a diss of the DA intrinsically.
Mm.
There must be something about party politics that requires a certain amount of discipline, even if you're a maverick.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a combination of the decorum that people expect you to behave in when you are a public representative. And then I think for some people, it's also just the rigidity of the way that the party is, that they feel they have to be a certain way. And so there's a catharsis, I think, for them when they leave to have that kind of exhale. And I think, you know, maybe sometimes I shouldn't have, but I think I've exhaled enough that this feels more to be more myself, but it's not a new feeling, I think. I think I've been quite open most of the time.
Look, there's a lot of important questions I must ask you in our allotted 20 minutes. And we will get to your record that you are rightly proud of. And I thought it was interesting and appropriate for you to cite your record in your statement that you released this morning. Because many people, women in particular, are often unduly shy and excessively humble to a fault in articulating your achievements. People also want to know what next, of course. Mm. But let's get to the real reason people are listening to this right now is why did she leave?
Yeah.
And there will be speculation. There will be your stated reasons, and then there will be people speculating about, quote unquote, the real reasons. Let's start firstly with your official reasons before I ask you chachra questions.
Well, I mean, officially and largely personally, I think I'm just in a trajectory and a personal growth journey that I want to explore a lot more things. I think I want to have more freedom to do a lot more than I can do in a political party. And I look at people that are older than me in some of the political parties, and it scares me that they are too comfortable with the way things are. And I just feel like my mind was going to atrophy if I stayed there, and it would have been easier to just sort of continue being in a cushy seat in parliament and doing the bare minimum to get by, because the bar is so low in this country. But I'd like to challenge myself, and I'd like to think that politics isn't the job for me, and as trite as it is because of the way politicians act, I feel it's a calling. So I want to do something that's more aligned with my purpose, and I want to challenge myself to see if the stuff that I think of how we can maybe reimagine politics or reimagine the way that civil society acts in the country is possible.
Mm.
So I don't want to just be sitting around doing the easy thing.
But there are two parts of your statement that give us a sense of where an actual push factor or two might have crept in. You say that you don't really want to rehearse what is already in the public space in terms of, for example, gossip and slander that happened, nastiness that you allude to in the subtext, particularly around the leadership race. Just refresh us, though, in terms of memory. What are those elements in terms of, and you use the word culture even, I think. What is it about the culture of the Democratic Alliance that makes it a labor of love to continue being a member, let alone a leader?
So, I mean, I did say that I didn't want to rehash it because I have been forthright, but I've had, you know, my conflicts with leaders who have, I think, used their platforms of being senior in many instances to try to intimidate or try to have their desired outcomes of whatever conflicts, and that's played out in the public. I've been the subject of city disciplinaries every other year, basically. With things that I think were really meant to either kowtow me or to make me feel like I should have left. And, you know, those are things are based around personalities mainly. But that kind of thing does take its toll on you and the peace and the mental stability. And, of course, if there's a culture where people can see that happening, not just to myself but anyone else, people wonder whether they should say anything. And so one of my things that I said in the letter when I wrote to my KZN colleagues is that they must stand up for themselves, but more importantly, they must stand up for others. And I think I was
out of interest, what is the calculation to be coy rather than to be blunt? Because if I, you know that I've observed your former political party for many, many years, because I think older political analysts have got a monopoly on understanding the ANC and tripartite alliance because they grew up inside those structures in ways in which us as younger people don't. And secondly, from a theoretical point of view, I think competitive politics, which I know you share with me, and it was a motive for starting out a branch in Grahamstown. Competitive politics is the lifeblood of a democracy. Mm. So keeping tabs on the opposition is, for me, something that's interesting and important.
You wrote a whole book?
I wrote a whole book on your former party. But yeah, I'm suddenly being asked to dig deep into my gift of interpretation to translate for my readers and listeners what you are saying. And what you are saying is, just like the ANC, there's factionalism within the DA,
sure.
And that factionalism sometimes results in structures, including the DC processes, being used for the benefit of one faction's political ends.
That certainly was.
Why would you? A, is that correct? Because I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Sure.
And if it is correct, I am interested in the meta question as well. Why wouldn't you be that blunt?
So, I mean, I think I have been. My entire leadership race, I said very explicitly that I think that the DACs and the FLC are weaponized against particular people, usually people who have a diversity of views that aren't aligned with the leadership of the time or the national, provincial, whatever structure, and that it's been bent to do that at the expense of killing the culture in the organization of people feeling that they can have those views. And the reason I didn't want to rehash it is because you can find it everywhere. I've written about it. It's on my Facebook. It's on my website. And anyone like yourself who obviously follows, I would just think that they know it. But I'm also trying to leave on a gracious note and not, you know, really get into that kind of mud, because then we start having to sling a lot of things around. And, you know, I keep all my receipts, so if somebody wants to say something that's incorrect, I'll be very sure to correct the narrative. But there's not much of a need for me to say it now. But yeah,
that was the most gracious political blackmail I've ever heard from a former politician.
No, I delete nothing. But yeah, for me personally, there's a part of it of just feeling that maybe I've also reached my ceiling, because now you have this.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet, yeah. You have this on your back all the time. But more importantly, I also just think it's time. And what's the saying about a dancer knows when to exit the stage? And I hope that people in the DA also take that. A
couple of quick questions before we transition. I'm such a nice person. I want to make sure we finish this conversation. I'd rather have you for an hour, but so that you can do your other media blitzes for the afternoon. So a couple of quick questions before I get to the next big question. Would John Steenhuisen be a really cool and effective South African president?
I don't think so. My view of John as a colleague is that he's done well in parts of his career. And as I said when I was running against him, I don't think he has the temperament sometimes to be somebody that could lead South Africa. And so, you know, but maybe he will be on a personal growth journey himself. And that's not to denigrate him or his character. It's just my observation from being up close.
Mm-hmm.
But he won, and democratically, the people in the DA believe that he can.
One thing about your statement that I found interesting, and I know that you spend a lot of time on it, obviously, because you're a thoughtful politician, is that to the extent that you were willing to make comments about the party at all, they had to do with culture or process, which is really interesting to me. And not so much about ideas and policy. And the last couple of days, the big news out of the DA is an attempt to have triple BEE thrown out the window and come up with a new way to get companies to make a difference to the country and to index lack of opportunity against, for example, class and other markers. Are there massive ideological schisms between you and other senior DA leaders on questions like race or redress, for example? Because it was conspicuously absent, or was it a case of you're not writing a book, there's more you could have said?
Certainly there is more that I could have said, but I think you need both to have an organization that is going to be successful and that is going to be able to do the kind of work that a political party should be doing. And if you don't have the culture and the organizational means to allow people to even place that on the table, then there's really no point at this point of discussing ideas, because it's not something that's going to be there. I think you need to change that and allow for people to be able to have that space to disagree or to put whatever issues they are that they think are important that the party should be considering. And that's what I think is the problem. Then, of course, because we're in politics, then you can have the debates about the various political ideologies or strategy or what people think on policies. And I think that there's a world of difference, even within the DA now, on some of these issues, and that's okay. But if no one can talk about it, then it just feels like to me you kind of speaking about something that will never happen. You should rather change the culture first.
I'm going to tap our professional relationship for another interview in the months ahead, where we can, without the hurly-burly of the news headlines, talk about some of those issues.
Sure.
Right? But I do want to explore one or two other aspects of your statement that jumped out at me. That it was just written deceptively, clearly and concisely, but the careful reader would be able to write a good higher grade essay about what is really going on there. Beyond the DA, in fact, you indict the entire political system, which is really interesting. Equity and justice are important normative values for anyone who's a serious Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And in your second last paragraph, you basically put on trial the party political system in the country as having failed to deliver those outcomes for our communities.
Mm-hmm.
Say a bit more about that.
And this is why I'm not joining another political party, because I see none of them being willing to sort of get out of the archaic mold that maybe had worked in the past century but is no longer relevant, I think, and that has, if anything, confined them to being unable to adapt to the times. And I mean, I'll use simple examples. Young professionals, people that are in various spaces like the media or corporates or wherever it is, or even just activists, aren't attracted to political parties. They are turned off by the way political parties engage with the politics of the day, the ideas that they put forward and the way that they behave. Mm-hmm. And that should be something that they all should be introspecting on. And I think that there's a rigidity to the system, but there's also just a lack of reimagining what that could look like. And I'm going to go off and try and answer that question, which is why
what seemed to me particularly an indictment of you as an individual and all of you collectively as politicians across the spectrum is that it's your job to make sure that you keep those touch points with communities alive
100%.
In a bottom-up manner. And a lot of what you are proud of in terms of where you started your career was precisely to make sure that the youth are rendered visible within the opposition, official opposition. Where did things go awry, and where did you yourself become part of the elitism problem when you started in those structures?
So I think, and I mean, this is not to sort of, you know, make myself seem better. I think I've really tried to keep those kind of flows important. But from the daily expectations of the work that you do and the way that party political systems expect you to work, for me, there has been that schism of it becomes more focused on party versus constituency community work, and which is another reason that I'm leaving, because I don't feel in touch, especially with COVID and the last 2 years, that I don't have a sense of grounding of where things are. But I think it's also easier for a lot of people to just go to a legislature committee meeting, listen, maybe don't open your pack, and then vote if you vote, vote, and go until you've done a day's hard. It's much harder to actually get back on the ground. And I think that people will rely on what's easier and, I guess, less difficult
well, it's
for
not
them.
Unimportant, but
no, sure.
There is a legitimacy crisis that opens up
but
if you don't have responsiveness to communities.
Exactly.
Right?
And also, who are you really talking to and talking about when you're not even having that particular ability to go back to those communities? For me, it's a big reason why I want to go back, because I do feel a little bit out of touch and I do feel insincere wearing the skin that I'm wearing right now as an MPL in the legislature. And it's uncomfortable.
Which brings me to my second last question. I said earlier that you were appropriately accurate in taking stock of your track record inside the Democratic Alliance. And it will be interesting to see whether the DA trolls will try and minimize your individual contribution to the electoral gains in KZN in particular. Mm. Your leaving is going to be a massive problem for them, because that those cleavages that you have in KZN stem from a combination of bloody hard work, especially in the most northern rural parts of the province, and also a win that sometimes is not sufficiently acknowledged by us, the children that were the experiments of multicultural education, that we have a dexterity, or as Americans would say, code switching, that enable us to speak linguistically, culturally across a number of different constituencies. Mm. Not to ask you to be arrogant, but speak into that for me, because one respect in which I thought you were perhaps underselling yourself in your exit statement is there was only a 1 percentage point difference across the two numbers you had cited in terms of electoral growth. But if we look at successive provincial numbers in particular, and how the IFP and the ANC have taken a hammering over the last 20 years, I think that the electoral inroads that the DA had made unexpectedly, given how we stereotype the party, were enormous at provincial level in particular, beyond local elections.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for me that was also one of the hard things, particularly with what happened to my former constituency, Mkanya Gude, in 2019. It was very heartbreaking for me to see all that hard work be reversed, I think, by a lack of strategy on the party's part to take rural votes seriously. And I felt very responsible for the people that we spoke to and were campaigning with, and the activists that, you know, sort of gave up hope, and the councillors that we had worked to get elected who couldn't come back. And it was very tough to swallow. But I am very proud of that work, and nobody had done it before in that particular area. But I'm not alone. There were people like Tlanganani Kumbi, who was in Zululand North, also a code-switching person of our generation. you know, people like Zwakhele Mwango, who was an exemplary provincial leader. And I think that the DA had such an opportunity to do a lot more there. And it was very difficult, I think, to see some of that disappointment. But I, for me, and it's why I put it in the letter, is something that I'm most proud of. Also because when we first entered the DA, everyone thought we were coconuts that couldn't work in deep rural areas or townships, and that's specifically where I focused on. So I also just kind of like, you know, being a little bit different.
In that sense. They thought you were fibbing in coming up with your biographical receipts about your family history.
So that's been really great. And that's where I want to go back.
Which leads me to the last question. Community work does have a strong tradition in South Africa, an incredible long history, including before 1994.
Yeah.
It is enmeshed with politics. Community work is political as well. Mm-hmm. And whether we talk about important historical flashpoints like the mass democratic movement, whether we talk about ward committees that had to supplement for a racist state, how to do social security in our communities throughout the 70s and 80s, the work of the Black Sesh, the work of Black Consciousness at that level. You know, it really is profound. Tell me what drives you philosophically in how you are conceptualizing community work. Who is the community? And then where will the money come from? And what are you going to do?
So I think that's a good question, the community, and it's one that I've been thinking about a lot, because I think there's a lot of communities, and I just think of the ones I'm part of. So even, you know, moms in Durban North are a community, students are a community, people in advocacy are a community, people who are social change makers in the actual physical communities where they are filling in a need that the government isn't doing our community. So that's part of what I want to be able to do now, is to really, I think, identify what we mean by a community and where you can best utilize those needs. But I'm really thinking at this moment very high level conceptual about putting those communities together and going to them where they are to try and help them and empower them. And I'm going to find money because, you know, I've been here for a long time. I think I've met enough people that have a lot of money. South Africa has a lot of money. And a lot of people want to do good, but they don't know how. And that's going to be the challenge that I set myself, is to go out and get these donors and decide how best
to utilize. Have you been fundraising?
I haven't been explicitly fundraising, but I've definitely looked at who I think will be amenable, that I have close relationships with, who I know have a lot of money to give and who don't want to give it to political parties. Mm. And so, I mean, I don't have anything concrete that I can fully say now, but all the things that you're speaking about now, the UDF, mass democratic movements, all of those movements for me seem as though they're already the archetypes for what we maybe need to go back to, and to rather have the power be more in the hands of people, faith-based organizations, civil society organizations, individuals with whatever single issue campaigns, and maybe take back some power in that way, because I can't see what we currently have giving us any different gains. And I'm sort of filled with rage sometimes, and I'm just tired of it. And I think most South Africans are.
Well, I wish you all the best. It will be really interesting to see what comes of those initiatives. And we're going to hold you accountable. You've now declared that you will be doing it. And I think what's also interesting about your statement is that you have explicitly said that you are still interested in politics, but it's a question of when and how that re-entry will happen.
Definitely. I think it's in the blood to never say never. But I need to do this, I think, for my own personal growth and also to
bonus question. Have you got a call yet from Herman Mashaba?
I've spoken to him.
He loves giving calls.
I've spoken to him in a lot over the years, but no, not today.
You're not interested in a little bit of Afrophobia?
Ah, Eusebius.
Thanks, Mbali. All the best.
Thank you.